you know, Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, because it would seem to indicate that wherever the Torah gives an affirmative command, he says, you feel like you're okay.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously, that can't be a tenable position either. It might be, therefore, and this is what the Gemara then continued by saying, that in reality, it was a difference of how to interpret verses that lie at the differences between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva in these three cases. But it doesn't mean that Rabbi Yishmael automatically negates the performance of mitzvah saseh. Obviously, there are mitzvah saseh, first of all, that if a person doesn't do it, he is violating. There are two such things in the Torah. What are the two? The answer is, one is Korban Pesach, and the other one is Bris Milah.
Right. You must do it.
Right. This is already, you know, these are two affirmative commandments that a Jew is obligated to do. All right. Today we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so we can't fulfill Korban Pesach.
Right.
So whatever we do is really sort of in the category of a Zecher LeMikdash. Although, you know, so it's still a question, is it the Midaraisa, is it the Rabbanan, and so on. And so along come, you know, the sages, and they say, I mean, eating matzah is Midaraisa, okay? Making Kiddush supposedly is also Midaraisa. Although in reality, I mean, there is no commandment Torah that says make Kiddush, it's the mitzvah of the Rabbanan, in reality.
Right.
But we say that the mitzvahs of the Rabbanan, they also have importance in our lives, and we have to keep them too, as for example the lighting of candles. Nowhere is there a commandment in the Torah that says thou shalt light lights. You understand? But nevertheless, our Chachamim came along and not only said that you have to ben shlicht and have lights, you know, burning, you know, on Shabbos and on Yontiv, and it's part of Shabbos and part of Yontiv to do it, but they also made a bracha. And what does the bracha say? Asher k'nishom mitzvayis avitzivanu al whatever it is, or you know, so, which normally is reserved for only those mitzvahs that the Torah itself specifies. The Torah says, for example, you should take, you know, the arba aminim and the sukkahs, right? Or it says that you should sit in the mitzvah, you should sit in the sukkah for 7 days, so that therefore we make the bracha, you know, asher k'nishom mitzvayis avitzivanu, or al netilas luluf, and so on. Okay, you understand? But nowhere, you know, does it say that you have to kindle lights. Yet, the Chachamim came along and said that we have to do it. First of all, they said because of Shalom Bayis. A house with light in it is a house where there will be peace between husband and wife, okay? And that's one of the important ingredients in family life. There's no question about it. And then, very frankly, we all realize the importance of you know, the
Bashen and Shabbos.
Right, well, absolutely, you know, to make Shabbos, it makes Yom Tov beautiful.
Yeah.
This, they did the same thing with Hanukkah.
Right.
Hanukkah, after all, came after the Torah was written, came even after the Tanakh was written. I mean, none of the events you see are in any of the books of the Bible, right? It's only in post-biblical literature that we find it, like, for example, the Book of Maccabees. It is part of the what we call the Apocrypha. And
so if it's not specified in the Torah,
right,
then we really call it the Midaraisa.
Okay, that leads already to another category. All right. Good question. Okay. Just wanted to point out before that, after all, what do we say? We still say Asher Gashem Tzivonu. What? Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, don't we? Say that. So that therefore that means that we do accept the fact that mitzvahs, the Rabbanan, have validity. Okay? So along comes the Gemara and says that when the Chachomim established mitzvahs, so it's Ke'ein De'orayis O'Tikdom, which means that they did it in the spirit of the Torah itself. Okay? As if the Torah itself gave its sanction to this mitzvah that they have, because they're doing it in the spirit of what the Torah has to say. Okay? Alright, so getting back then to the machloikas between, you know, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, we see that there are psukim, there are differences of how to interpret it, and Rabbi Yishmael comes along with a statement that says that whenever we find the same thing repeated twice, right? Dovra Nishtes Vatori says, Why? They Davashan is Kaddish one. It's because of something new that has been added to it. A new element has now been entered into the into the discussion. Okay? And it is because of the new element that he interprets that, for example, in the first case, you know, that it would be Rishus and not Chova. Why did it have to be repeated? So to tell you, you know, that in this particular case, it would only be Rishus in his opinion and not Chova. Whereas Rabbi Akiva has his own arguments for saying that it is Chova. All right. So we got as far last week as wait a minute. Oh, no wonder. No, I'm on the wrong page. Yeah, I know. Automatically. I was looking at base and wondering why it does. Okay. Yeah. So he says, "Kol Pashish and Emor v'Nishtach Nes Ela Bishvil Davash and Shlish Bo." All right. So now we're on line 3, 4. All right, line 6. Okay. All right. Now what is the new one that they're going to discuss? It's Le'olam Bohem Tavod. Right. That you are right. That if you have slaves, you must always hang on to them. That they always have to serve you. Okay. Keep them as slaves. And Rishus, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, right? As we said before, in the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, this is only voluntary if he feels like it, okay, but if he wants to free the slaves, he has every right to do so, right? Whereas Rabbi Akiva Omer, Chova, okay? Yeah, he says it's mandatory, correct. All right, so the Gemara wants to know my Talmud of Rabbi Yishmael. What is the reason that Rabbi Yishmael says that it's only Rishus if he wishes to do it? So he says, I did it save inasmuch it is written. Lo sechaye kol nishomo. If you remember, in Sefer Devarim, there is a command over there to destroy the Canaanites. Not all the Canaanites, because there are plenty of Canaanites, but talking about the Shivat Goyim, that there were 7 nations that it was a mitzvah to destroy. Why? The Jews had bad experiences with them, whatever it was, right? And so the Torah says that for these 7 nations you are commanded to destroy, like Haknani, Achiti, Amori, Aprizi. Actually, Haknani is more general, all right? But, you know, Achiti, Amori, Aprizi, etc., etc., you know. Okay? Theoretically, you know, they're supposed to be destroyed. Okay, I say theoretically because in reality, yes, many of them, you know, were killed off in wars between Israel and those nations while Israel was busy conquering the land.
Does it have anything to do with Moloch?
The Moloch is already separate.
Wasn't he a Canaanite?
No. Moloch was a Moloch, okay?
Amalekite,
exactly, okay? So,
they didn't live in Canaan.
Yeah. Of course, another nation that afterwards entered into it, I mean, was the Midianim, because of the conspiracy that they had, you know, that they were, they egged on Moloch to try to destroy, and, you know, led by Bilam and Peor and so on.
Yeah.
All right. But at any rate, in theory, these people were supposed to be destroyed, okay? I say in theory, because in reality, we read also that when Joshua conquered the land, there were still pockets that he never conquered. It looks like in one fell swoop the entire land was conquered, but in reality, here was a place which he didn't conquer.
Probably is due to Avodah Zorah, because they probably the practice of Avodah Zorah, and to destroy them would eliminate the temptation.
But it didn't mean that every Canaanite nation, I mean, because that's only these specific ones, okay? So, at any rate, since the Torah says, right, lo sechayeh kol neshama, that as far as these Shivas Umos are concerned, you know, the 7 nations that were supposed to be destroyed, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to, you know, to keep them alive. So, itzrich nami lemichtov, therefore, we also have to, the Torah also has to tell us, literally, le'olam b'hem tavoda, that you are to keep them eternally as slaves. In other words, there are Canaanite peoples that you can enslave and not kill, okay? But it would seem then that, you know, they are subject to being held eternally as slaves, right? So, why does the Torah have to say le'olam b'hem tavoda? In other words, after saying, you know, destroy them, right? So it says l'mishrei echad b'kol ha'umos. This is in order to tell us that if, let's say, one of the other nations, you know, not the seven that were condemned, okay, had intercourse, shibol haknanis, with a Canaanite woman, okay, the holy bimeno bain, and as a result, she gave birth to a child, and she gave birth to a son literally from him, right? Sha'atora shaylik doise. You are permitted to purchase this child as a slave. Actually, it means when, you know, actually, you know, to make a slave out of him, okay? So, the Tanya, as we have learned, this is a Gemara that we find in a couple of places. It says, Binayan li echod min ha'umos. How do we know that if one of the Canaanite nations, one of the other nations, excuse me, Shebol Akdanis v'holi mimina bein, Shatur HaShadik Noso, the Eved, you know, they permitted to buy him as a slave, so Talmud Lomar, right? This is why the Torah has another pasuk of us to say. It says, "V'gab mibnei hatoshavim agorim imochem mehem tiknu," and likewise it says, "From the children of the inhabitants who live in your land," in other words, you know, from non-Jewish inhabitants, you are allowed to buy slaves. Okay, yochol afaknani. However, let's say that this would apply also to the Canaanite man, Shebo al-Achas bin Harumos, who had intercourse with one of the women from other nations, other Canaanite nations, but not the condemned ones, holy men of Ben, and he gave, he had a son from her, Sha'ata Rasha Niknosi Da'evin, that you are permitted to buy him as a slave, Talmud Lomar. This is why the Pasuk then says further in the Torah, Asher Holidu B'Yatzachem. This applies only to those who are born in your land. Min HaNoladim B'Yatzachem. From those who are born in your land. In other words, if they were born in Eretz Canaan, okay. But below, Min HaGorim B'Yatzachem. But not from those who are simply living as sojourners in your land. And this is, of course, whose interpretation? This is Rabbi Yishmael, right? For Rabbi Akiva, how about him? Mimehem tiknu nafka. So, the whole idea, you know, about that you are permitted, you know, to purchase slaves from the groups that we were talking about, we already learned it from a general rule which says, you know, from the word mehem, from among them, you can purchase slaves, right? So the yolom behem ta'avodu lomali. So why then does the Torah have to say, forever shall you keep them as slaves? So he says lechova. This is to show that it is an obligation to keep them as slaves. It is a mitzvah, so to speak, and you can't break the mitzvah. Okay, for Rabbi Yishmael. So what does he do with the word behem? Rabbi Yishmael behem. So he says, well, b'hem means below b'acheichem, means that from those people you can take slaves, but you're not allowed to do it me'acheichem, from your own brothers, that you can't. For Rabbi Akiva, b'acheichem, how does he, derive the idea that you're not allowed to buy Hebrew slaves, except under the circumstances that we mentioned? I mean, you can't go out in the market and buy them, but they can only be, right, as we said, under two circumstances, right? Either the Beis Din itself says that this man owes an obligation because he stole, and he has to work out the amount of time, you know, by being a slave. That's one possibility. Or the other one, as we said, a man is destitute and he feels that he wants to sell himself as a slave in order to have a master who will take care of him and his family and everything else. Okay? but you can't go to a slave market, in other words, but and purchase a Hebrew slave. That you can't do. Okay. All right. So, how does Rabbi Akiva handle that? He says, well, and after that, after it says that you can't do Ba'achechem, it says, Mesefa de Kroot Nafka. He derives it from what follows afterwards in the Pasuk, where the Pasuk says, Va'achechem b'nei Yisrael ish b'yochim, and from your fellow Jews, each man losidim of the forest, and not allowed to rule over him. The English translation is with rigor. Beforach means by assigning him those kind of labor which are meant to degrade him. Gemara has different ideas, you know, as to what do we mean by degradation.
Like cleaning screens or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, as for example, you can't tell him, let's say, you know, carry, let's say, carry my clothes and so on into the bathhouse. Why? Because it's a degrading act. You're not allowed to degrade him in any way. Okay? You have to treat him nicely, gently. You have to handle him with kid gloves and so on and so forth. You can't assign to him work to which he's not accustomed to doing. It has to be work only in the category in which you know, he's capable of doing work and things like that. So, I mean, this is why the Gemara subsequently says, you bought yourself a slave, you bought a master to yourself.
you can't teach him anything new to do?
You can't also assign him work that would be mindless, busy work.
Like, yeah, that's
true. I think they use the example.
To
just for the sake of having him do the labor without any purpose.
Right. Very true. As I said, I'm not going into the whole deal, you know, because there are many different things that
work with no purpose.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Basic idea, as I said, he must not be humiliated, even if he is your slave. Okay. He was purchased for a specific reason, and this is his job that he has to do. But you know, don't have him do things beyond the general call of duty. So. Yeah.
Pronunciation.
It says Beporech.
Beporech.
Why does it say Beporech? Normally it would be Perech. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But since it's at the Sof Pasuk, so at the Sof Pasuk in the Bible we find that very often two segals become a comus in the segal. Mm-hmm. Okay? Not in every word, but many words. As for example, the word Eretz would become Oretz. Okay? So Perach becomes Porach, okay?
Only at the end of a sentence.
Yeah, or that's Nachtor, because that counts sort of like the end of a sentence, also, right? It's like a semicolon, so to speak. It's Nachtor, okay? Bob Dushevsky, you know, he asked me if I would say something about the Trump in this program that he's planning. What are they calling it? The cycle of life or circle of life or whatever it is or something. Yeah. I think that's going to be the first Sunday in February. So I said I'd be happy to do that. Specifically wanted to know about the Trump for the Megillos. So I think, you know, what I would like to do is to speak about Trump in general and then to go into the examples of the different types of Trump that we have, you know, depending upon what it is that we're reading from. Okay. So, we see then that Rabbi Akiva also agrees, of course, that he cannot, you know, enslave a fellow Jew, but he derives it, as I say, from a different part of the pasuk as compared to Rabbi Ishmael. All right, now Rabbi Ishmael, how about him? What do you do with this idea before us? So he says, either tichsiv achichem, inasmuch as it's written, and from your brothers, oksiv na me bohem. That's why the Torah then has the word among them, from them. Dichtir Tanya, as we have learned, Rabbi, Devei Rabbi Ishmael, in the school of Rabbi Ishmael, they taught the following, the Tana Devei Rabbi Ishmael, Kol parsha shenemro v'nishneis, any parsha in the Torah, or you could say, if you wish, in the same section, any new pasuk that is added, right, that is relevant, so, and was repeated, lo nishneis ela b'shvil dover sh'nishkanish. It was only repeated in order to teach us something new. Okay. So, at any rate, getting back, we see, to sum up this particular little section, A, that there are legitimate differences of opinion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, but it's not based upon the fact that Rabbi Yishmael holds that any affirmative commandment, any mitzvah aseh, is something that if you feel like it,
you do.
If you don't feel like it, you don't do. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would say, it is a chovah. No, there are reasons why Rabbi Yishmael said in these three cases why he said what he did, namely that in the case of a man to be jealous of his wife and to go through with this procedure, that this is only voluntary for him, whereas Rabbi Akiva insisted that it's a mitzvah to do so. Or in the case of the people for whom a kohen has to be metameh, that as far as the sister is concerned, we might think that it is only voluntary to do it. So it may be voluntary, but it's not necessarily voluntary according to Rabbi Yishmael, whereas Rabbi Akiva says it's mandatory. And then the business over here with slavery in Evet Kanani, where Le'olam Behem Ta'avodu is taken by Rabbi Akiva as meaning that you can never free a Canaanite slave, whereas Rabbi Yishmael says no, he can be freed. And as I pointed out last week, a slave can be freed. I mean, the halacha follows in this particular case Rabbi Yishmael, not Rabbi Akiva. Slave can be freed if somebody wants to purchase it and then free him. Slave can be freed, particularly if there is another mitzvah involved, as I cited to you last week the case of Rabbi Gamliel and his servant Tavi, whom he freed in order to help make a minyan. And finally, a slave can also be freed, and this is the law of the Torah, that if he is injured in what they call the Rashi Avorim, in other words, any of the principal limbs, so he is freed automatically, he gains his freedom. Besdin will automatically give him his freedom. By principal limbs, I mean, let's say he knocks out an eye, a tooth, okay, or cuts off a finger, or whatever it may be, okay? So if any of these things happen, then the Torah demands, it makes it mandatory for the slave to be free. Yeah.
Well, it would be at that particular point that he'd rather not be free.
Well,
because he'd be maimed, incapacitated, and what would he do for a livelihood?
Well, it all depends. Listen, we also have a law in the Torah, that speaks about Hanek Taniklo. But of course, that was really in reference to the Eved Ivri. Nevertheless, it doesn't mean that you can't extend it to the Eved Kanani. Hanek Taniklo means that when he gains his freedom, you have to give him a good send-off, severance pay, exactly. You have to be generous. Mitzoncho, Megorncho, Meyikvecha, as the Torah says. You have to give him sheep, you have to give him grain, you have to give him wine, and so on. In other words, you have to give him a good send-off so that he can really establish himself, and keep going. You could say the name Anak. It's from this word over here. Of course, they also use the word the sense of a tip that you give to somebody. Yeah, Anak. Oh, excuse me. My phone is bad. Okay. All right. Anyway, let's continue. We'll learn a little bit longer before my voice gives out. We got to at least finish the daf after all. It's pashtish if we don't. Okay. All right. So now we have some more agadot over here. Mm-hmm. Some very interesting agadot. Okay. Amar Rav Chisda said, "Zenuso beveso kikayon shum shemo." Says that zenus, in other words, adultery in a home, is like a worm in a sesame plant. Apparently what he's trying to say is that it worms its way in and then destroys it. Okay? The Yom Rav Chisda said also, Tukfo Beveso Kikai Lishum Shemo, says that anger in a house is also like a worm in the sesame plant. In other words, it's not just adultery, but even, husbands and wife always yelling, screaming at each other and so on, fighting all the time. This also is like a canker worm, so to speak, that eventually it's going to destroy the shalom bayis. Then, very funny statement, it says, Idiri, Idiri, Yitzo, Avodagavra, Leslambo, says, both of these things apply to a woman, but to a man, it doesn't make any great difference to us. Now, I don't buy that. Do I not buy that, but we have plenty of other counter statements in the Gemara to deny this business, okay? But as I say, this is only a statement, that the Rav Chisda says. It doesn't mean that it's halacha or anything like that, okay?
He said it.
I don't know. Maybe his wife provoked him in one way or another. I have no idea what happened. But at any rate, the first two parts I don't think anybody can argue with. Namely about either adultery or even anger, continued anger within the home. But this, why only it would be on the part of the woman and not on the part of the man, that's pastish.
Is he implying that the man can't commit adultery?
Yes, he's not implying it.
Obviously, this is based upon the fact that a man, could play around a little bit, whereas a woman cannot.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it's not right.
We got permission.
It's not right. It's not right.
My friend.
I think that we all know that it's not right, okay? Truth of the matter is that even in a society in which polygamy was sanctioned, and of course, according to the Torah, it was sanctioned, but nevertheless, they were aware that it was not the ideal solution. The fact that wives became jealous of each other.
Look at the
right,
Torah.
Right. And also the fact, that...
Yaakov had a problem.
Yeah, of course he had. Absolutely he had problems with that. And the fact that among all the great Tanoim and Amoraim, we never have a case that I can recall where any of them were polygamous.
Really?
Yeah. Each of them was married only to
monogamous.
Monogamous, absolutely. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. So, there's a certain difference between, shall we say, what is theoretically possible and, what are the realities of the situation. Right. And
that's what made them great Tamachachamim. They realized that one wife was enough.
That's right. Okay. All right.
Nope.
Yeah, do a little bit more, and then I'd like to do a little bit of Rashi. Rashi to be mad at me by our...
You're going to finish this doc? You're not going to finish the doc?
Yeah, we'll try. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Alright.
The Umar Akhista, remember I pointed out many times that when you have very often they'll give a whole string of statements by the same author, because frankly, to remember by heart, all this was not written down until several centuries afterwards, okay? So to remember the statement, it was easy to group them all together, and they remembered, Rav Chisda said this, and he also said this, and he also said this, and so on, okay. So when Rav Chisda, he says, Pitachilo, at the beginning he says, Koidim Shechotu Yisrael, before the Jews sinned. Of course, the first big sin that we read about is what? Matzei Egel, right? Yeah. So he says, Hoiso Shechilo Shorim, call Echad V'Echad. then the Shekhinah actually abided with each and every single Jew. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ki Hashem Elokecha Mishalech Bekerev Machanecha, because the Lord your God literally walks about in the midst of your camp. Right? In other words, the Menu Shalom is there taking a look at each and every single person being concerned. Right? Kevan Shechatu, when the Jewish people sinned, then this Talko Shekhinah Mehem, then the Shekhinah departed from them. Shenemar, V'lo Yireh Boch Evas Dovar, and in other words, God will not see anything lewdness in you. But why does of the it's because of the Shom Yacharecha and turn from you. In other words, that if God sees that the people of Israel are engaged in doing lewd things, Ervas Dova, then in that case he will turn aside from them. So that's why when he saw them sitting, then in that case the Shem departed from them. Omer Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omer Rab Yonasan, Shmuel Bar Nachmeni said the name of Rabbi Yonus, it says, Kol Ho'isa Mitzvah Achas Boilam Hazeh, whoever performs a mitzvah in this world, V'kadamta V'holeches Tefon Boilam Haba, it precedes him, it goes before him into the Olam Haba. In other words, it's there in order to stand up, you know, to show that this person has merit to stand up and the judgment and so on and so forth. So it accompanies him and even precedes him into the Olam Haba. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'holach L'fonecha Tzidkecha, literally, your righteousness will walk before you. Of course, there are many other interpretations of this, okay? But this is the literal interpretation over here. The Chol Ho'ever Avera Achas V'Olam Hazeh, however, whoever sins a sin in this world, B'la Papdei, it's just literally like it envelops him, right? V'Holeches L'fon Ov L'Yom Hadin, and it goes before him to the Day of Judgment. Shenemar, Yilofsu Orchos Darkom, Yalu Batohu V'Yovedu. It's a pasuk in the book of Job, which says, Yilofsu Orchos Darkom. The paths, ways that their paths become like twisted. But by a lopez also means that it clings, okay? So in other words, the evil things that they are doing will cling to them, right? So yalo v'tohu, the oveo. Literally, they will ascend into tohu, into the void, into the emptiness, right? And they will perish. So, in other words, the averas that we do will also accompany us and might cause us, you know, to lose Olam Haba. Rabbi Eliezer Eimer, Kishur al-Boy Kekelef, he says that sin is tied to a person like a dog. Shenemar, Velo Shema Eleho Neshkav Etzlo Liyos Imo. Yosef, you remember when he was approached by Potiphar's wife, right? We read that in the Torah this past week. So he says he did not listen unto her, either to lie with her, right, to lie with her, or to be with her. Lishkav etzlo, to lie with her, boilam hazeh, liyos imo leilam haba, or to be with her in the world to come. In other words, by virtue of the fact that Yosef refused to lie with her in this world, so therefore he was spared having to be with her in the Olam Haba. Okay. Of course, this is one interpretation of what the Pasuk says.
Talking about Potiphar.
Huh?
Talking about Potiphar.
Yeah, Potiphar's wife. Right. Asian
Potiphar's wife. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There are other interpretations too for the Pasuk, I don't have to tell you. But this is the drash that he's making over here. Okay. Tanan Hosam, we learned in one place, Shehoya Bedin. We might have figured out logically what? That either that we should have two witnesses or one witness in the case of the woman who is suspected of adultery, right?
Mm-hmm.
We might argue on the basis of, you know, let's say, logic, okay? This is usually what we mean by Bedin or Dinhu. So, Umar Eidus, what is the logic over here? Inasmuch as testimony harishona, right? In other words, the first time where witnesses come, they tell the husband, you know what, we saw her, you know, and she was talking to a guy, and the husband has not yet won or anything else. So what do we say? She'ena sarta yisraelam, right? In other words, he still can live with her and, you know, have relations with her and so on, right? So, einam is kayemes. Such testimony is not valid b'pachos b'shnayim edus, right? B'pachos b'shnayim, if you have less than two witnesses over there. So, edus v'achroina, the latter testimony, she'osarto yisraelam, which is going to make her prohibited to him forever, right? Eino din, isn't it logical, shalotis kaim befochas mishnayim, that you need at least two witnesses to do it? Of course, this is the opinion of whom? Rabbi Eliezer, as we saw, right? Excuse me, not Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Yeshua. It's Rabbi Yeshua.
Yeah.
Of course, it was Rabbi Eliezer who argued that one witness would be.
Right.
Okay. Talmud Lomar, so how do we know that it's not necessarily so? Because the Torah says the aid ain't bought, right? That there is no witness literally against her, but kol sheyesh bo, right? How do we interpret it? We interpret it as kol sheyesh bo. If there's only one even who testifies that he saw her, you know, so that already would be sufficient to cause her to be prohibited to her husband from now on, right? So he says, v'kal v'chaymer, and we'd say all the more so that it's a rishona, right? Maybe let's argue the other way around. Let's say that maybe, look, maybe we should arrive at the fact that the Eretz Rishona should also have only one witness by virtue of the fact, what? Me'ato, from this fact that right now, look, this latter testimony, which we said would be valid only with only one witness, correct? She'osato yisraelam, which makes her prohibited, you know, forever unto her husband, miskayem is be'ed echad. So in that case, it is a rishona. Why can't we say that the first testimony, she'osato yisraelam, which does not make her prohibited forever to her husband, Eino din shetiskayim beit echod. Isn't it logical that we would only need one edus? So
where do we get the presumption that the conclusionary testimony is permissible with only one witness?
That's how they interpreted the eid ein bo.
Oh, I see. Right.
Why did the Torah say the eid ein bo in this case? We were arguing that eid normally would be, we said it's a binyan of, right? It's a bona of. The entire Torah, eid means always at least two people, right? But they said here it was an exceptional case. Why was it an exceptional case? In order, so to speak, in order to strengthen, you know, the code of morality, so to speak. And so therefore, the Torah says v'eid en bo, and that, you know, it specifically adds the word v'eid en bo in order to indicate that even one witness would be sufficient. Mm-hmm. As I said, I mean, this is only, you know, one man's opinion, okay? But nevertheless, it's an opinion, I have to tell you, that, you know, many of the commentators feel is valid enough, okay? But not everybody, because we saw that, you know, there's a contrary opinion. They said even here you have to have two witnesses, otherwise it's not valid, okay? Yeah, so why can't we say that, you know, it would be valid in the first category, that one witness would be enough, you understand? In order to prohibit her. So Talmud Leimah, so this is why the Torah adds what? Adds the fact that Kimotza bo evastova. He found in her something, a matter of lewdness. Okay? Of course, this is actually from the business about the get rather than about sota. But the implication is that it would also apply over here to the Parsha Sota. Okay? Found something. Now, if the word Dover is this, it says, Ma Dover Ha'amur Lahalon, just as, you know, Alpi Dover, and so on and so forth, Chol Dover, right? In other words, when the witness arrives, the Chol Dover, right? So it says, Lo Yakum Eidechot, the Ish, right? But I'll pitch Dayim Edim, I'll pitch Losha Edim, and so on and so forth, Yochum Dover, right? A matter can only be established by a testimony and so on, okay? So, what they're saying over here is why the Edim HaRishonim do you have to have two witnesses? Because we make a Gezei Rishova, we use the word Dover in Motzubo Evas Dover and compare it to the word Dover in the case of criminal and civil procedures, okay? Yeah. He must have been so Halon afterwards who I'm right up Pish Nayadim or Pish Loshadim, right, Yochum Dover. So it says Ma Dover Omur Lahalon. Just as the word Dover that we find afterwards is Al Pish Nayim Adim, right? So Afkan, why don't we say then Al Pish Nayim? You need two. So that's the rule then, that you have to have two witnesses for the initial procedure. Okay? So now they say, now they question, why are you schlepping in a quotation from Gittin and applying it over here, right? This is what they want to know now. He says, Hi, the key Motzuba Evas Dover, Nafka? Nafka Mabor. Says, why do you take, you know, that taking it from there, why don't instead apply, as we said earlier before, that in the Parsha Sota, what's written over there, right, that the Kinei Boa, in other words, he is suspicious of her and so on, right, he suspects her, he warns her, etc., etc., okay, he says Miboa Nafka Boa, Miboa Nafka, why don't we get it directly from the Pasuk that we have over here in Parsha Sota, Boa Velo Bekinui, Boa Velo Bestira. In other words, that when it comes to Kinui and Stira, right, we learned that Lo Bikinui, Lo Bo, Lo Bistira, so it's in boiling. We need that. So what do we need it for? It's in order to tell us, you know, that Hokinami, that likewise here, Ko Omar, namely what? That on the basis of Bo, we know that for Kinui and Stira and so on, we require two witnesses, right? So Talmud Loma, Bo Velo Bikinui, Bo Velo Bistira, Lo Bistira Betumah. Excuse me, yes, Velo Bistira. Now he says, Betumah be Almo, Velo Kinui, Velo Stira, Velo Mahemon, Elechot. Now, to say, you know, that she actually should be, suspected go through the ordeal with the husband and so on and so forth, right? They cannot go through this ordeal. And in this case, we're saying, Alon Meheman et Echad, in Alon, how do we know that one witness will not be trustworthy? So he says, Nehmar Khan, because it's written, Ki Motzabo Evas Dovar, so, Nehmar Lahamun Al Pishne Edom Al Pishne Edom Yokum Dovar. Ma Dover Omer Lahalon Edim Shnayim, so Afkan Edim Shnayim. So, in other words, as we see, the argument goes back and forth. One proving that, one, you know, one. The Eid Ein Bo tells me that one witness is enough as far as the actual business of Stira and Tuma, and the other one says nothing doing. If it says Ki Motzo Bo Ervas Dover, he finds something, you know, that's lewd in her, in other words. So in that particular case, he has to have witnesses, and witnesses means you have to have at least two. You cannot do it on the basis of one witness alone. Yeah, Tanu Rabbanon, sages thought, Ezehi Edus Harishona. What do we mean by the first set, the first act of witnessing? Zu Edus Tira. This is the one that revolves about the fact that, you know, after he warned her and she still went into seclusion with the person whom he warned her again. And what is Eidus Achrona? And how about the last one? In other words, what does this refer to? He says, Zu Eidus Tuba. This refers to testimony concerning the fact, you know, that she had gone ahead and she had had sexual relations with the man, and it was Tomei. All right. Next page. Well, we'll start it for a moment, because we'll do just a little bit of it, and then we'll call it a night. It says, pardon me? What did it add? Okay, you asked it a good question. The answer is that now we're trying to determine, we said Eidus Rishoyna and Eidus Achrayna. All right, so the question is, what do we mean by Eidus Rishoyna? What do we mean by Eidus Achrayna? We've been using terms, and now they want to know, what do the terms mean? Right, now they want to know, so what do the terms mean? Exactly what it is.
You mean the first and second name.
Right,
or
right.
Right,
because we could say that the first one, right, is simply a warning, kinui, okay?
Yeah.
Then, the next one we would say would be stira the tumor. You understand? Or, now they say, when she goes into seclusion with the guy, and then the Eidus Achrona, this is the fact that obviously she must have had relations with the man with whom she was secluded. So how do we know that? So this is why now on the next page we'll see V'chamo Shir Stira Kidei Tumo Kidei Bio Kidei Haro Kidei Hakofas Deko Divi Rabbi Yishmael. Okay? Rabbi Yishmael tries to give a definition as to what do we mean. What is the time amount which is involved in stira, right? That is, in her going into seclusion in order to bring us to the idea that she has undoubtedly committed something that she has no business committing. In other words, if she would go in and then come right out again, there's nothing to talk about, right? But if she's in there for a certain amount of time, then we already suspect that the things are not so right over there, that she's doing something she had no business doing. So, what would be the time that's involved over there, okay, for a tumor? So, it would be kidei bio, the amount of time necessary to have intercourse, or is it kidei ha'aroh? Maybe it is the amount of time which is simply, for, let's say, for bodily contact, but without necessarily,
sexual contact.
Or, this is the next one, which is, or kidei hakofas dekel. Maybe it's the amount of time that it takes to go around a palm tree. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, according to Rabbi Yishmael. The amount of time, in other words, just as the short amount of time that it takes to go around a palm tree, this would be sufficient time to say that something might have happened over there. Okay.
Well, I didn't give it much time.
Right.
So, unless they got fat palm trees.
Right. Well, some palm trees are big, there's no question about it. So at any rate, next week we'll start from here from the top of the page, and we'll see, because the argument continues. We're not finished with it yet. Okay. Okay. Right. I'll start from just a little above the middle of the Rashi. I was saying, Karyo, he tells you, what is Karyo? So he says, Karyo.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's see, maybe I'll go from okay.
Which
all right, I'll tell you what, I'll start from the top. I'll do a little bit from the top right now, okay? All right, let's start from the top a little. All right. Also, that is not in order to teach us that it's obligatory. So, Lichto Rachmoni says, let the Torah say, law, the Lishtok. You're right. This is in reference to the fact that, why did the Torah, did the Torah say, did it make it mandatory for the husband to go into, to go through the business of kinui and steer, etc., etc.? Okay? The mashma. Oh no, excuse me. They're talking about the Kohen being Metami. The Mashma, it's written, the Nefesh lo Yitamor, the Yamor, right? that you're not allowed to defile yourself, that is, the Kohen cannot defile himself by coming in contact with a dead person. The Amok means any other person other than his immediate family, except for his own immediate family. Right, and then La Chose Habsulo Law, what does it say? And for his unmarried sister unto her, Koloma Lugufo, Sholem Veloivareh. And so we said, I mean, that means, you know, if it is, you know, if she dies, then he has to do it. But if it's only for an aver, we said this last week, if it's only a limb, so he doesn't have to be Matamit for her. Then, all right, coming with the Canaanite nations. Okay. Canaanite nations, remember, says Lo Sechaye Kol Neshama, right? So you're not to allow to leave alive, right, or let live any of them. So he says Beshiva Umos Ksiv, right? This is with the seven nations specifically. Achiti, Vahagirgoshi, Vahamori, Vahaknani, Vahaprisi, Vahachi, Vahayabusi. Okay? Those are the nations that are involved. Alright. So Lemishre Echod Ben Haumos, Mishaor Shivim Lemos. So this is to teach us that any of the other non-Jewish nations from the rest of the world, right, Sheboal Haknanis, who had intercourse with a Canaanite woman of the called Zion Umos to Kloshem Canaan, in other words, any of the seven, and obviously there were women, right? So, and the Holy Bain, and he had a child, the Holach, or the Haloch, Achar Ho'ov. You should really read this, the Haloch, the Achar Ho'ov. In other words, you have, in the case of the Goyim, the genealogy, so to speak, follows the father. The lineage follows the father, right? And therefore you're allowed to keep him alive as a slave, even though what? Even though the mother was a Canaanite, but nevertheless, the child follows the father's lineage.
Right, and the other way around. If the father is a Canaanite, but the mother is...
No, so that doesn't work.
But the
first case was the other way around.
Oh, the first case, okay, but I mean, it'll work
right.
In both cases.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, the first case, we said, this is the case that we're discussing right now.
All right.
All right, that somebody, you know, a goy, had relations with the Canaanites. So in that case, the child follows the father, okay? Okay. I'll tell you what. The second case, of course, is a different story. Why does it happen? Okay? So this is what Rashi goes into right now. Alright, so he says, for the Tanya Lahochi Osa Dekron, and for here he brings a Pasuk, Be'evit, the case. Alright. Anyway, Begam Ibnei HaToshavim, and also from the children of, you know, those who live in Eretz Israel, but are not from the Canaanite nations, right? La'el B'nei Ksiv, above it in the Torah it's written, May Eis HaGoyim Asher Sigiv Oseichem, from among the Goyim who surround you, right? Mayhem Tiknu Evidvon, right? You're allowed to buy, to purchase a male slave or a female slave. Asher Sigiv Oseichem, which means those who surround your country, in other words, you know, people who are living, but Velo Mibnei Artsechem Neshiva Umos, but not from among those who are living in the land right now as among the seven Canaanite people. Okay, so the Gam Ibnei HaToshavim called Toshav, in other words, every inhabitant, Hainu Shebomim Mokim Acher, in other words, he came from some other country, Benis Yashav Khan, and he settled in Eretz Israel, the Ka'omar Kroos, so the Pasuk says, Shemuto Liknos Mibnehem, that you are permitted to buy from among their descendants, Asher Yulahem Mibnehot HaTzecho, from among the daughters of the land. So this is how they interpret that you're allowed to buy from a goy who is not from the Canaanite nations, even if the mother is a Canaanite woman, right? Now, how about the others? Min hanoilodim yatzachem, it has to be from among those who are born in your land. Vonim hanoilodim yatzachem, children who are born in your land, v'heim b'nei atoshavim. In other words, we mean the children of the Toshavim, the non-Canaanite Umos, right? The Hainu Acherim, right? Shenosu b'yatzachem noshim. In other words, others married women in your land. So Atorah Shadik knows. But the lo min hagiorim beyatzechem, but the lo min habonim anolodim lifnei beyatzechem, but not from among the children who will be born to those who live in your land, in other words, from the Shiva Umos. The Mokim Acher, right? Mibinos Sheor Umos, Behaviyum Livnehem Lagusham. So this is already another twist. Namely, what if a person comes in from another land, right? So from them, you cannot do it. In other words, Goyim, they were living out of the land of Israel, so from them you don't. Velo Bachechem. And then afterwards, you know, he talks about Avodah Zarah, but not among, you're not allowed to enslave your own fellow Jews, right? Make them into slaves. So, Rabbi Yishmael, Ida Dechsiv Achechem, Siv Name Kibitanya. Alright. Karya, what is Karya? It says Tolas. This is a worm, Shoshum Shemin, right? Of the sesame plant, or Chaltan. So, Kachas Nus, Machrevis is Habayah. So, likewise, this adultery destroy the home. What is tukfo? Tukfo, he says, is kas, anger. In other words, he says that anger also destroys. And then he says, idi v'idi tukfo mizanuso, the amrinan that we have said to machreves as abayis, it's be'itso, kishere isha masna, when the woman, or mizana to be more correct, when the woman is commits adultery, o kasonis, or she's very angry all the time, l'fisha isha misasekes mizduneho, the Yeno Eso Malachto. He says the reason being that the woman gets so involved in her adultery that she doesn't do her homework, the housework. The Lomi Shaver is Beso, and she doesn't take care of her home. Mafkeris is Shelba'alo Alam Noafim. And not only that, but whatever her husband has, she wasted upon her lovers. No, all right. I won't comment anymore, except as I told you, there are also contrary opinions.
What does she do? What does she do with
his money? Let's say, he gives her money for the household expenses. What does she do? She buys gifts for the lovers and so on.
For the lovers.
Her lovers, right.
Her lovers.
Her lovers.
Oh,
her lovers.
She's being
right, well, right. Right.
Really, I never did divorce. I only did one or two. It's probably one of the reasons. But when I was maybe about my third year of practice, I remember from a woman I represented. She's another lady came in the office. And
are you speaking on the record now?
Yeah, well, it's been one. And she was having an affair with another man, and I remember that they own a lot of property jointly, and she would collect the rents, which she did at least this one instance. She collected the rent and then used the money to buy her lover a gift. So when I read this, it's like 19 centuries later, right? Actually, what happened was we went another step in the court, and then I just told her I didn't want to represent her. I gave her back the money, and I remember she filed something.
You didn't divorce her?
No. She filed something. And then they sent me a letter saying it's okay to do that. As long as I gave her back the money, and she could find another attorney, which she did. And then after she did that, the case went like another step and just got tied up completely. Nothing ever resolved itself. It just sort of like sat in court for a couple of years or something.
Yeah, should report to the Gemara then.
Right. Okay, let me just go a couple of more lines on the Rashi and we'll call it a night, okay? All right, so he says, remember the Gemara says, Kodim Shachotu Yisrael, before Israel sinned, right? So the Shekhinah was there. So what particular sin are we talking about? So Rashi says it's Barayos. In other words, the sin before Israel sinned by committing the various acts of adultery, this is what caused the Shekhinah, to...
Oh, really?
Right.
It was over.
Yeah, okay. So prior to that, Im Kol Echod Echod, the Veso, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Shekhinah would be found in each and everybody's home, okay. But once they sin, then this talcum mayhem, right? The Shekhinah departed from them, milavola veisam, to come into the homes. The enu yochol yiroz ba'averos shebeveisam, because the Shekhinah cannot bear to see the averos that are carrying on in his home. And then we read that if you do a mitzvah, what is going to happen? Then it's mekadamta, right? Lefnei misaso, machrezes lefonov. Before his death, it proclaims that a great tzaddik is coming to Gan Eden, okay? But if he commits, averos, then in that case, what do we say? The avera melapapto. What is melapapto? So it means korachto. In other words, it envelops the person as he goes to prepare for the Yom Hadin. All right, we'll stop at this particular point.
Are we going to come back to the Rashi next time, or what?
Yeah, I'd like to finish a little bit more of the Rashi over here
before we go
on to
the
next
slide.
Page. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Today is
okay. Right. We have to identify
December
18th, 1996. That's right.
Culture
involved by 1997.
Yeah.
Sota.
Eric Mission and what?
Yeah, we're still learning Sota.
Yeah.
All right, we're on Daf Gimel on the days.
Okay.
And we'll be finishing up the Rashi in company with the text.
Okay.
And then continue with Daf Dalet tonight. Okay.
Proceed.
Okay, we proceed. All right, first of all, does everybody have the place? You see where it says Tanan Hosam. Malapafto was the last thing that we did over there, and we learned that Malapafto means Karato, in other words, it envelops him or it surrounds him, you know. It's from the same root, you know, that we have, for example, Korech. It's one of the steps, if you remember, in the Seder service, you know, that you literally, you take the morer and you wrap it around with matzah on two sides, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
sandwich.
That's right, and that's why we call it Korech. That's why when they wanted to develop a word for sandwich in Hebrew, they developed the word Korech.
Krich.
However, I have to tell you that in Eretz Yisrael today, they don't say krich, they say sandwich.
Sandwich.
That's a good Hebrew word today. Okay.
Yeah,
so you see,
too.
English helps.
How can you say I want a krich? Right.
First of all, it sounds like in Yiddish, you know.
Particularly, you say, Ham on Raya, krich.
All right, it's a problem that Israel faces, nevertheless, too. That there are some who would prefer it. Yep.
Unfortunately.
Right. Okay. So now we continue. All right. So Rashi continues by explaining the text that we have in the Gemara. It says Tanan Hosam. We have learned there. Question is where. So he says, "Beferek Mishakine." Lekaman Lamed Aleph, which means in chapter Mishakine, which we'll be learning later on in the year, and as you can see, it's Daf Lamed Aleph, Omed Aleph. Remember, the dot over there on the bottom means that this is Omed Aleph. If it were Omed Beis, it would have two dots. Okay? Yeah. So, the question that we learn over there is, am I, for what reason, the Katane that we have learned, Omar, that he said, Eid Echod Re'isiho, not that one, Omar Eid Echod Re'isiho, one witness says, I saw her, Shanit Me'ok, that she was defiled, right? So, Lo Ha'yaso Shaysa, then in that particular case, she would not drink the Mayim Hama'orim. So, at this particular point, we are not discussing, you know, what they're going to discuss over there, but we are discussing one thing, and namely, what is it? It's the problem of the Eid Echad. Okay? How can we accept witness?
One witness.
With one witness. Okay? So let's compare it with the text again. Tanan Hosam, you see where it is? It's a couple of lines to the right over there, going down. Okay?
Yeah.
It says, Tanan Hosam, I'm reviewing the text again. It says, we have learned over there, right? Shehoyo Bedin. What does it mean, Shehoyo Bedin? Shehoyo Bedin means that, you know, we could figure out logically. Now let's look at the Rashi. Shehoyo Bedin. Okay, keep one finger on text and one finger on Rashi. Okay? Like I'm doing. Following teacher. All right. Shehoya Bedin. So Rashi says, Shelo La'amino, he says, logically, we would not believe this one witness that, you know, she had committed actually adultery. I mean, which is after all, is the idea of tumah, right? Ilav dechsiv kro. If it weren't for the fact that there is a pasuk, and of course, what pasuk? That was the pasuk that we learned is for eid ein bo. We said that that was an exception. Okay. So, okay. So he says, you know, then in Tanan Hossam, in that chapter later on, we learned that logically we would have said the following argument. What? Uma edus horishona. Just as the first witnessing that they give against her, she'enu sarta yisur oilam, which will not necessarily prohibit her forever to her husband, right? I am putting in the word... I qualified it slightly. Why? Because we'll see in a minute how Rashi understands it. Okay? Eino miskayemes, any rate, that cannot be fulfilled, bepochis mishnayim, right? Less than two witnesses. So, eidus ha'achrona, the latter one, namely, that actually she had committed adultery, right? So, shosarto isur elam, which then prohibits her forever to her husband, right? Eino din, isn't it logical, shalot is kayem b'pochas b'shmayim, that too cannot take place unless there are two witnesses to testify to it. I mean, it's a logical thing, right? The first case, we need two witnesses, and yet there's a good chance that she will not be prohibited to her husband forever, right? So certainly in the second case, where we know that the definite result will be that she will be prohibited to her husband, isn't it logical to assume that we have to have two witnesses at least to testify to that fact, right? This is how the argument is running right now, right? So Talmud Lomar, this is the reason why then the Torah gives us a text which says, the aid ain't bought. There is no witness against her, but as we said, there is a witness, one witness, all right? Kol sheyesh bought. This is how they interpret it, namely that there is somebody who is witnessing it. Okay? All right, so now the next question, of course, is what is the aidus rishayna and what is the aidus achrayna, right? All right. At first blush, we would say that the Eidus Rishayna should be in accordance with what the Mishnah said. Namely, that Kinui, in other words, for the husband to give her a warning, it has to be in the presence of two witnesses, right? And therefore, Eidus Achrayna, we would say, and subsequently, if she went and she secluded herself with a man, then automatically, you know, she would become prohibited to her husband. And only one witness would be necessary for that. Okay, this would seem at first blush. However, we'll see now that Rashi doesn't take it that way, and of course he bases it upon a Gemara. Okay, all right. So now we have to take a look at Rashi. Okay. Okay. Horishoina in the Rashi, you see, yeah. Okay, what is the Rishona? What is the first witness? So he says, this is Stira. In other words, two witnesses have to come and say that they saw that she went into seclusion with a man. If you don't have two witnesses, then in that particular case, it sort of knocks out the case. Okay, yeah. Right. Now, why isn't it Ein Osarta Yisr Eilam? Why is it possible that she will not be prohibited to a husband for the rest of her life or the rest of his life, right? She'im tishte, because, says Rashi, if she will go ahead and drink the mayim hama'orim, right? The timotze tahora, and she will be found that, you know, she is innocent, literally that she is pure, right? Then muteres lavalo latruma, that in that case, she not only will be permitted, you know, to live together with her husband after having gone through the ordeal and proved innocent, but also if he were a Kohen,
she could have truma.
She could eat truma, exactly. Because normally there is a chashash, it's not mentioned over here, but you know, from other places in the Talmud, we know it's a problem.
What's a chashash?
Chashash is that there's a suspicion that something was wrong, okay? If a woman is kept captive, in those days they used to kidnap people, okay? Put them into jail and who knows what, and then, you know, after a time they would be seeking ransom, okay? And this is why Pidyon Shvuim became such an important mitzvah among Jews, because Jews were simply being kidnapped by the Romans, the Greeks, and the Goyim in general, okay? And they would use it in order to extort ransom from the Jews in order to get their freedom. But the problem is that if, let's say, she was married to her Kohen, then the problem is, was she violated while she was in prison?
While she was captive.
Right, while she was captive, exactly. And so in that case, then one of the things that would be prohibited to her would be to eat truma once she was released, because of the possibility that she was violated and she no longer could actually live with a husband who was a Kohen. So this is why I feel that over here, you know, the Chachamim is stressing the fact that even if he were a Kohen, but if she is proved innocent of the charge through the Mayim HaMa'oravim, in that case, you know, not only can she continue living with him, but also that she's permitted to eat truma. Okay?
Well, yeah. See, I don't understand the rationale for that, because there's no Kavanah.
What do you mean by Kavanah?
Well, there's what we would call mens rea. I mean, there's no intent on the part of the woman to commit adultery in that instance.
Yeah,
you're talking about the captive woman.
Yeah.
I only schlepped it in order to show you.
That's right.
I schlepped it in, as I said. I schlepped it in order to show you that, you know, there is, you know, a suspicion, you know, that if the woman, for example, fell under suspicion, if our present woman fell under suspicion, then she too should be denied.
Oh, I see.
Truma on the basis, you know, that she got herself into a compromising situation. You understand?
Well, I thought I did. But you're saying that the captive woman will be denied truma and the right to live with her husband?
Yep.
What is the rationale?
Because she may have been violated, and as a result she became, you know, remember, a Kohen must marry what? He has to marry, well, not a virgin necessarily. I mean, he can marry a widow. But he's not allowed to marry a zayna, a chalola, a gerusha, you know, these things. Okay, that's the reason why, okay? So this is the reason why they felt that, you know, if she were possibly violated over there, maybe she even consented to it or something like that, you understand? Maybe she wanted to save her life. She was afraid that, you understand? So, at any rate, on that basis, she would be prohibited to a Kohen. Not to an ordinary husband, but to a Kohen, okay?
But you understand what you hypothesize, I don't want to make a comment, but what you hypothesize, the Kohen was already married to her.
Idea
of her.
Well, even over here, the Kohen is married to her.
Right? I mean, it doesn't. In other words, the idea of her being, Isha Mechulelet or whatever.
Doesn't
apply because she's already married. They're already married. It isn't a question.
Now we're not talking about the fact, you know, as to whether her offspring would be not exactly illegitimate. I mean, a chalal means that he is no longer permitted to serve as a Kohen. Mm-hmm. Okay? And he's denied the rights of the Kohen. But that doesn't mean that he's illegitimate. That's a different story. Illegitimacy, remember, in Jewish law, involves those who, where the arroyos are involved. You understand? Mm-hmm. In other words, if the offspring of a man and a woman who are closely related through family ties, in such a case, the child is a mamzer or a mamzer. Mm-hmm. Okay? But a chalal is not a mamzer. Chalal is a different category. He's legitimate, but he's no longer permitted, you know, to serve as a Kohen.
Well, maybe I'm not using the right terminology. Where I'm looking for is that a Kohen would not be allowed to marry a, let me see if I'm getting this right.
Right.
Not allowed to, an ordinary coin is not allowed to marry a garusha.
Garusha, correct.
Zona. This
right,
is
right. Chalala.
Amana.
Chalala.
Right.
Okay,
no, no, Amana he can marry.
He can marry him.
Okay.
The only one who's prohibited from marrying an Amana is the Kohen Gadol.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Chalala is an illegitimate from a woman that is his birth or ancestry is up in the question. Right?
If you wish. I mean, it's not illegitimate exactly, okay. But okay.
Right. Now, why?
In other words, the Kohen married somebody, you know, who. Or the offspring of such a woman is a chalala. Okay? In other words, the daughter of a woman who the Kohen okay, would be a chalala.
Isha Marutsa. Is he permitted to marry her?
Oh, what?
Marutsa.
What does Marutsa mean?
I think I'm getting this right.
Perutsa?
Perutsa?
Oh,
sorry about
okay.
That.
Good, 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 good.
Perutsa.
All right. A Perutsa is a woman of loose morals.
Right.
She's the same category as a Zayna in this case.
Okay. Now,
so.
That's what I thought. Now,
yeah.
But here, if you were going to make the argument, Perutsa, you're going to make the argument that this woman, because she was in captivity,
mm-hmm.
would fit into this category.
Yeah.
All right. I have two problems with this. First, the Kohen is already married to her.
Yeah, so.
It's not, well, because what you're saying is that because this had happened to her, he would be prohibited from being married to her. But in fact, he's
already
married
to her
before
this occurred.
He
would have to divorce her.
He would have to divorce her?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
he can't keep on living with her. Yeah. Pardon me?
She didn't have a warning. She didn't have a warning.
Good word.
No, we're not accusing her exactly of adultery. We're only working on the suspicion that something might have happened because of the fact that she had no control over her life at that point, that she was subject to the jailer, you understand?
Well, and what if she says that it didn't happen?
If she says to Horani,
yeah.
She could claim that. In that case, bring it before Besen.
But I have another question. How about, I think this is right, Korcha, no, it's duress. She did not act up her own will.
I understand.
So isn't that a defense or an excuse?
Normally it is. I mean, normally onus is the defense, right?
Right.
The word
okay,
is onus.
Onus would be, all right,
yeah.
Onus would
yeah.
be okay. No.
Right.
Well,
onus
so
means that she was
forced.
She was forced, right.
Are
you
implying
that it doesn't work for Kohen?
The problem with the Kohen is that the Kohen has to maintain a higher status. That's the problem. Because he's... Kodesh not Hashem, you understand?
Contaminated.
I mean, he's dealing with Kodshim, you know, all kinds of holy things, so he himself has to be in a holier state than the ordinary person. She would not have been prohibited to her husband had the husband been a Yisrael.
But when,
you know,
wouldn't that defense of
onus... Or a Levi. Levi doesn't make any difference. The same as a Yisrael in this case.
Onus
yeah.
is better.
Yeah.
Wouldn't the defense of onus be available to the wife of a Kohen also? I mean,
well, she could argue the point. Listen, I'm not sitting in the best end right now. Only pointing it out that there is that possibility, and that's why perhaps Rashi over here is stressing the fact, you know, that not only is she permitted, you know, to live again with her husband, but if he were a Kohen, she would continue to eat Truma with him, because she has been proved to Hora through the Bayim HaMorim. Okay, all right. So getting back to the Rashi, it's a digression, but you know, I really feel, you know, that we have to understand, you know, what the text is and how Rashi understands the text. Okay. Okay. Oh yeah, but in children, I mean, right? So Yisrael is different. Einay sato Yisrael, as we said, sheim tish tev tzimotzi tzehora, right? And in that case, muteres the v'alot truma. All right. And what had we said? All right. So now, the argument for the moment is as follows: that inasmuch as for Stira, we needed two witnesses, right? In other words, the fact that she's already gone into a rendezvous with the guy, we needed two witnesses to attest to it.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we say that, to say, you know, that actually she defiled herself with the guy? One witness is sufficient. So on the basis of logic, we said it wouldn't work out. We should require two. But there's a pasuk that says ve'ed ein bo, which we interpret that one witness is sufficient in order to you know, to declare that she's asura lebala, she's prohibited to her husband. Okay. So now the Gemara questions that.
Well, even if you have one witness, then why you really don't have a case against her?
In this case, you have a case against her. But why do you have a case against her? Okay? So something we touched on before. To a certain extent, what we're doing right now is, again, to go over some of the previous arguments we've had and analyze them more. Okay? But if you remember, we came to one conclusion when we first introduced the idea of the Eid Ein Bo, that it would be enough for one witness. Okay? Namely, Raglayim Ladover. What is Raglayim Ladover? That we have a prima facie case, so to speak, right? That you know, she's up to no good by virtue of the fact she had been warned, and yet she goes and she has a rendezvous with this guy, and so on. You understand? So that therefore, Eid Echad would be sufficient because we have other evidence already to determine this. That's the reason why. Okay. But of course, if you remember, not everybody accepts it.
No.
I mean, we read that, right, no. Even for this, we should have two witnesses. But we're arguing now the case where Eid Ein Bo, one witness is sufficient, okay? excuse me, a little bit clogged tonight. Okay. All right. Now he says, V'kal v'chemer, later Sarishayna. Now, maybe we could have learned, all right, we've established before, we said on the basis of the Kal V'Chomer, which we might have argued, and which of course we say that we don't accept, right? On the basis of the Kal V'Chomer, we said before that if in the case of Stira two witnesses are necessary, right?
Certainly.
Then the logic would be that in the case of Tumah, we should also have two witnesses.
Right.
All right, so therefore we said the Eid Ein Bo in order to show us that one witness is enough. But why can't we argue the reverse? You understand? The Kal V'Chomer Leidus HaRishona. Maybe we should learn the Kal V'Chomer from the second case to the first case. Right? The Kal V'Chomer Leidus HaRishona Miyata. Maybe we should learn that. In other words, what? Ma Eidus HaRachroina, just in the last case, Shosato Yisroelam, where she would be prohibited forever from living with her husband, right? Ms. Kayemes, this testimony is established by Eid Echot. So, Eid is HaRishona, maybe the first one, namely about the Stira. She'eino Yisarto Yisroelam, as we've already said, Eino Din Shetizkayim B'Eid Echot. Why can't we say that in that case too? One witness would be enough, right? So why do you insist on having two witnesses in that case? You understand? So Talmud Lema, this is the reason why we have a pasuk that says what? Ki motzo bo hervas nova. Pasuk says, the only thing is, this is really in the connection with divorce, but still they're schlepping it in over here, because if the husband found something unseemly, but of course the word erva is stronger than simply unseemly, the way the English translation says, right? So it must mean, you know, that the something that he smelled that was not kosher, right? So the same thing with Sota. He's full of suspicion that she is also committed erva, you see. So he motzubo erva's dover ula halon, and afterwards hu omer, the pasuk that is the Torah then says in connection with something else, and it says al pi shnei edim. Well, pi shlosha edim yokum dover, right? So ma dover ha'amula halon, just as the dover which we find mentioned further on, namely about witnessing in general, right? Is al pi shnayim edim, has to be at least with two witnesses, right? So afkam. So likewise here, in the case of what? In the case of stira, where We're talking about simply Motzeba Eva's Tova, that, you know, he's suspecting her of having done something not right. Okay? So it has to be Al Pishnayim. So far, what we have maintained then is what? That on logic alone, we can't do it. This is why we have to have Sukkim to teach us. And what did Sukkim so far teach us? That in the case of Stira, which, as we said, this was the Eidus Rishona, right? We needed two witnesses. So in the case of Tuma, one witness, only based upon the fact that the Torah itself said one, okay? As we interpreted, Ein Bo, okay? So now he says, hi. Yeah, I just want to see if I skipped any Rashi, okay? Okay, it is Akram, it's Tumor Shayachar Stira, right. Kol Shayesh Bo, it says, alright, Rashi over there. Kol Shayesh Bo, it says, call Eidus, wherever we have testimony, right? Wherever witnessing is involved. Shayesh Bo Ne'emon, where we have a person who can be trusted as a witness, right? Kiddedar Shinun Le'er, as we said before, the Eidin Bo. So, in other words, in the case of the Tumah, one witness alone, assuming he is a trustworthy witness and can be believed. Okay? Hashin Le'el Ve'edin Bo is Trey, normally we would expect two, Elochad, right? Ein Bo Trey, in other words, where we don't have two, but Elochad, but we accept the testimony of one. The Ko'omar Asura, the Ko'omar Asura, we said that, you know, she is prohibited. Va'tumokai, and we're talking about the case, you know, where we feel that she has actually committed adultery with the man. The Homino Solik, because from this we derive that he knit more, right? The Eidein Bo. Alright, so Kal V'chomer, isn't it logical, Shatizkayim V'Eid Echod, to say that Stira too should be one witness, of Talmud Lomar. This is why the Torah says, Be'ishima Kalkelis, in the case of a woman who is departing from the straight line, right? Kimotzebo Evas Dovar, and so on and so forth. Alright. So now, the Gemara wants to know the following. Yes.
Is it now that, are we getting to the point where the Halakha is going to say that two witnesses are not necessary in every step, but that for the final step only one witness will be sufficient?
That's correct. That's the way it's standing right now.
Right now.
That's the way it stands right now. And, you know, the authorities are divided about that. I have to. There are those who are choshish, as we would say. You know, in other words, they take into account the fact that, maybe one witness, according to the law, would be sufficient. Inasmuch as we said already, raglayim nadobar, in other words, there are other circumstantial pieces of evidence, you know, to confirm the fact that she's not behaving the way she's supposed to. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why. On the other hand, there are those who say that in any case, we still have to have two witnesses. Okay, so this is what the problem is right now. Okay, so now. The Gemara wants to know the following. It says, "Hi, the ki batzaba evas dover nafka." Says, "Why do we have to go and go into another inyan?" As I said, batzaba evas dover speaks really about divorce. So why do we have to schlep in the business about divorce when we can prove our case what through the text itself? The text itself, of course, in Sota. This is what we're talking about, right? As Rashi says, right, the Farkinon, we ask the following kasha, based on Lomali Lemichtav, why do I have to have, to go to this Pasuk, Lemilfa B'Gzera Shova, to teach us about the Gzera Shova, namely, that if it says, Motzabay Evas Dover, so that therefore we have to have witnesses, because with witnesses it also says, Al Pish Daim Edim Yokum Dover, and so on, right? Why do we have to go to all that? Napka Mibo. Why don't we derive it from the word bo? The eid ain't bo, right? The he nit bo, and so on and so forth. Okay, so the kinei bo. Okay, that word bo is found several times in the chapter which deals with sota. So why do we have to go to outside? Let's stick to sota itself and see. Maybe we can derive a similar teaching. Bo velo bekinui. Bo velo mistira. Maybe we can figure it out. I mean, that as far as she's concerned, it does not apply either to the initial warning or not to the fact that she secludes herself. Miboile. So why can't we use the reason, you know, that the word boy is going to say one witness is enough and maybe exclude maybe another situation. You understand? So he says, Hochinami ka Omar. Likewise over here he says, Talmud Lomar Bo, Torah mentions the word Bo, Bo Velo Bikinui, Bo Velo Bistiro, right? Now this is how he's interpreting. He says, Bo means not when it comes to Kinui. What did we say Kinui is? Kinui is the warning that he gives her, right? He says that he's seen her fooling around with somebody and he's warning her not to. He needs to witness the fact that she is, you know, too close to somebody, okay? Bo velo bistira, right? And likewise, we would say that you need two witnesses for stira. As we said before, right, that when it comes to the seclusion, you still have to have the witness, you know, the testimony of two witnesses for it, right? The tumo be alma, but when it comes to the actual, you know, the deed of defilement, he says this would be, you know, below. No, okay. He introduces here a new element over here, okay. But we would say that tumo be alma, that we have to have, you know, one witness, okay? But now he's giving in another ice. He's bringing another thing. He says, the tumo be alma, look, says when it comes to, you know, the fact that she might possibly have committed adultery or not, below kinui, below sestira, and the husband had never gone through the steps of either warning her, the kinui, right? Or of having witnesses that, you know, she had secluded herself even after he had already given warning to her not to, right? So the law may...